Most cities are home to more movie theater screens than at almost any other time in the last 50 years. Yet the diversity of films being offered on those screens is dwindling as the cinema marketplace is increasingly controlled by a handful of large theater chains. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. The rise of cineplexes and the decline of independent art house cinemas has been a concern for many cinephiles for a while now, and it's a subject on the mind of today's guest, film writer and film programmer Jeff Berg. Berg has just returned from the Art House Convergence Conference in Utah and has an article on art house cinema in the current issue of Film Comment magazine. I'm happy to have him back on the program today. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Chuck. It's great to be back. It's been a long time.
Nice to hear your voice. I should mention you're joining us by phone from your home in Santa Fe, but you were formerly of Las Cruces, where you were heavily involved in the Fountain Theater for a number of years there and a lot of other independent film initiatives in the area. Mm-hmm. I thought as a dropping off point that maybe we should define the term, how you use art house cinema, so that people understand what that means.
Sure. I kind of covered that a bit in the article you mentioned, that's in Film Comment, when I was doing research for this, and it was rather difficult to really find a defining point for it, but what I finally came up with is that there are venues that have a somewhat more specialized audience, one that's more mature and discerning, one that's open to appreciating a blend of foreign films, smaller American films, documentaries of all sorts, special events, and the occasional breakout hit such as Boyhood, that rely more on storytelling than pyrotechnics.
Yeah, and tend not to be as Hollywood heavy studio film based as our cineplexes have become.
Exactly, yes, definitely.
Independent cinemas, though, I guess go all the way back to almost the beginning of cinema. The art house component really got going, I'm thinking of the heyday of the 50s and 60s, where it seemed like audiences, at least in America, had an appetite at that time for foreign films, for films that weren't coming out of the traditional Hollywood studio system. But that seems to have really flagged a lot, the interest in those kinds of films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was, like, the basic history of the art house that I have found is that there were a few spotted around the country back as far back as the 20s that did experimental films and foreign pictures and things like that. 50s and 60s did see an upswing, especially the late 60s. And in the 70s, they really took off with more of the, what I guess we call it now, more independent cinema first started, like things like Easy Rider and things like that that were not studio-based, or even like Billy Jack, which made millions and millions of dollars for its run. But they're actually, since they're mostly independent cinemas, I found that they're mostly doing quite well. And there's definitely an uptick in the number of smaller indie cinemas that are opening around the country. One of the trends I found in talking with my semi-colleagues, I guess you call them right now, at the Convergence in Utah, is that micro cinemas are really, really big right now. And those are places that have, oh, maybe 30 to 50 seats. They're in a small rehab kind of building or space, like an art space, and they usually do quite well.
And these have upgraded seats and maybe loungers or sofas and usually a really nice menu and drink service?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah. There's a place that I read about in just opened in Bend, Oregon, which has that kind of stuff, and it has 30 seats, but they're all like, you know, soft luxury seats, and maybe they even have some vibrating recliners there or something, I don't know, but that's really a trend. And then I was also finding is that things have to be a little bit more, you know, not gimmicky, but more
premium.
Premium, yes, exactly, good word. The operators have to be able to offer something a little bit more than just a folding chair in a movie like in the old days when John Cocteau Cinema at Santa Fe first opened, and they had folding chairs and a sheet and, you know, homemade popcorn. So things are doing well, but they have to be more creative for sure. So
the Art House Convergence Conference you just came back from, it sort of leads into the Sundance Film Festival, and that's a fairly new conference that started a few years ago when it seemed like art house cinema and independent cinemas were really facing an existential threat with the conversion from film-based projection to digital, because there was an enormous economic cost to doing that that a lot of independent cinema owners just were having difficulty swallowing.
Yes, definitely. It was, I think it's one of the reasons that the art house people came together. theater in Michigan kind of started it. And it started small at the Sundance Film Festival. There's like 10 theater operators who were invited to attend a special meeting at the Sundance Film Festival back in, I think it was 2009 or so. And they saw some of the problems and they faced some of the same issues. And so they decided to start this really loose group and to get things more on track for the upcoming changes and things that they were facing. Plus, at that time, a lot of the big distributors or big studios had their own line of distribution for smaller independent-type films and things like that, which most of them have faded out. But that was seen as a threat as well, because those titles that the theaters that existed at that time would lose those to the big box theaters again.
So. Yeah, and we should state that, you know, the threat was really brought on by Hollywood and the major studios basically saying a few years in advance that they were going to soon be cutting off all film distribution, that everything would be digital. You'd get it on a hard drive, or you'd get your film in the mail on a thumb drive or something that you'd have to load up into a digital projector, and the cost for conversion could be anywhere from $50,000 per screen.
Yeah, that was definitely one of the crises points, shall we say. In fact, when I went to the conversions in 2013, that was like the subject that they really dwelled upon, because everyone was in the middle of convergence trying to afford it. Some were scared that they were going to go belly up if they couldn't afford it. But it really kind of all worked out pretty well. A lot of venues used Kickstarter type campaigns and relied on their audiences to help them get the funding. And I think almost all of the people I talked to, in fact, at this convergence had gone digital. And the prices have come down, too. Even the Fountain Theater in Mesilla, my old venue, has gone digital the last few months as well, too. So it's worked out okay for most of the indie venues at this time.
You mentioned Kickstarter and audiences participating in some of that conversion. And, you know, I can't imagine Cinemark going out with a Kickstarter campaign and getting attendees to pony up extra money to help them go digital. But that's another thing that I think is not only charming but relevant to the art house cinema movement, is that these are usually locally owned cinemas where all the programming is being done by somebody in that community. Mm-hmm. They really know their audience. They're trying to produce a program that's responding to that audience, and their audience is usually quite loyal.
Yes, exactly. It's really, really important. We've, as I've discovered over the years, going to this thing that local works. It worked at the Fountain. It works here in Santa Fe at a couple of venues here that are, like, there's a ton of indie venues up here, and there's more coming in. There's 11 screens coming up at from a small chain coming up this spring. But local works, and there's a huge loyalty to the rehab, especially the rehab kind of places that have been saved and brought back to life by the public and by grants and things like that.
So it seems like the mood is really changing at Art House Convergence?
Definitely, and this year's Convergence was huge. There was like 500 people there, and they weren't all theater operators, managers and stuff. There's lots of distributors, lots of vendors. So it's more than doubled in size since the first time I went, and I think it was 2011. So it was pretty amazing to see that. In fact, I think they've kind of outgrown the place they have it at, which is right near Sundance, purposely.
I thought it was a really interesting development over the holidays that one of Hollywood's major players, Sony, was embroiled in this international intrigue with North Korea over its film, The Interview, and really were held hostage by the major monopolistic chains in the theater world, at least in this country, dropping their bookings for The Interview. And it was these small independent art house cinema owners that began stepping up saying, we'll screen that film.
Yes, exactly. That was part of the art house convergence, finally getting into the real national news. Like, we know, they've been covered in Variety and in some other film magazines and stuff. But when Russ, who works at a theater in Michigan, who's kind of he is the head of the group now, brought that up, and they had some press releases, and it really, really helped get the word out about the smaller cinemas. And a lot of the theaters booked the film as well, in spite of the fact that it was out on video, like pretty much the same day, or pay-per-view the same day during the same time. But a lot of them booked it just to get that business out, and it really, really took off. It really helped
well,
a lot.
I think it also showed that these independent owners and the art house cinemas around the country are not only I don't think they were making a qualitative judgment on the film, because I have not seen it, but I think it got mixed reviews and is probably not a great film. But they were really responding to the fact that they don't shy away from controversial material, and they clearly believe strongly in the First Amendment and not limiting access to films of all kinds. And so I thought it was a pretty powerful statement of, you know, we're still here, and this is one of the reasons we matter.
Exactly. Yeah, Russ Collins, the gentleman I mentioned before, who's from Michigan, who's the head of the thing, really made that a point. It's like, it became, to some of the art house people, it became a matter of you know, freedom of speech, First Amendment thing. Others disagreed. I kind of sat on the fence with that one myself, because I didn't know all the facts and figures, and I didn't want to see the movie anyway, so it didn't really matter. But it did play here in Santa Fe, because the venue I last worked at, the Jean Cocteau, which is owned by George R. R. Martin, the noted author of Game of Thrones, was also very vocal in his opinion about the film being blocked and such. And that theater was able to get like a strong 2-week run, I was told. So yeah, there's definitely a voice there for it, and this really helped a lot. And I think it made the big boxes and stuff sit up and take notice, because, you know, like Regal and Cinemark and those guys, they didn't run it at all. And you know, the novelty's worn off, but still, it was really a high point for the art house, independent art house people. So.
Ultimately, is the next major threat coming from streaming? That, you know, the fact that we can all sit at home now, we have access to tens of thousands of films directly into our computers and televisions.
Yeah, that's been a point of contention as well. But again, I think the loyalty factor really kicks in, and as it was brought up at one of the talks I attended, that just to keep the momentum going, and people want to see movies on the big screen. I mean, those who are really into their iPhones and such are not going to do anything but look at their iPhones. But most of the rest of the movie-going public, I think, really wants to attend big screen stuff. And I think box office attendance in general was up last year a little bit. So that kind of helps prove that point, that movies are still relevant.
And the communal film-going experience is still relevant. I think that's what people are still responding to as well.
Yes, exactly. I feel that myself. Even when I go to a movie here, I like having a theater to myself, and that happens once in a while. It doesn't happen much anymore, but being with the crowd and, you know, feeling and seeing their reactions, or when I program something and to sit back and watch, is much different than watching a DVD screener at home with the cat sitting in my lap, which is nice, but he can stay home and I'll go to a movie. So,
fantastic. Well, yeah. I hope Art House is here to stay for many, many more years, and you're certainly one of the most voracious consumers of all things cinema, so I'm glad you're adding your distinctive programming voice to Santa Fe's cultural landscape now. Thanks so much for speaking with me today.
Oh, sure, no problem. I'm glad to hear from you again, and I look forward to interviewing you again someday on the show.
Love to.
All right.
I've been discussing the past, present, and future of art house cinemas with Santa Fe resident film historian and film programmer Jeff Berg. Berg's latest article on the subject can be found in the January issue of Film Comment magazine, and you can follow his selections for his own Real New Mexico film series at realnewmexico.com, and that's real spelled R-E-E-L. On Film's producer is Norma Martinez. An archive of past programs is available on this station's website at ktep.org. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.